Damn it all, Grind.
It's not my fault her father died.
I blame him for dying. If only he had lived an hour longer, 1 hour longer, that would have been enough. I blame him, no one else.
There's no one else.
Well, not for this, Miss Chance, but I have an old score to settle with that nephew of mine who carried off your mistress. What did he mean about the £10,000? He said 10,000, the precise sum paid in but yesterday for the two mortgages, and which would have gone out again at heavy interest tomorrow. Could the banking house have failed? Could he know if it had? Come, we must leave.
In the coach, Ralph sits in the furthest corner and utters not a word. Upon arriving at Bride's house, the coachman knocks on the door.
Hey, it's no use knocking, coachman. Ring the bell. My housekeeper pays very deaf. Ring again, coachman.
Much knocking and ringing ensues, which is heard by everyone but Peg.
Oh, come on, let's get inside.
I declare, I'm almost afraid to go in. Suppose she should be murdered, lying with her brains knocked out by a poker, eh?
Well, what if she were? I tell you, I wish such things were more common than they are, and more easily done.
What?
Oh, you may stare and shiver, but I do.
Ralph turns and leads the way into the house, followed by Gride. It is the same dark place as ever, with every room dismal and silent. There is no sign of Peg.
No!
What's the matter?
Robbed!
Robbed? Of money?
No, worse.
Worse than money?
Oh, far worse.
Of what, then?
Oh, far worse than money. Far worse. She'd better have stolen money, all my money. She'd better have made me a beggar than have done this.
Done what? Done what, you devil's dotard?
Oh, I'm ruined.
There's something missing, you say. What is it?
I'm ruined. She saw me reading them. I did so very often. She watched me. She saw me put them in a box, and she's stolen it. Oh. Damnation, Caesar! She's robbed me.
Of what? Of what? What was in the box? Speak before I dash your brains out.
Papers, deeds. But she don't know what they are. She can't read.
Then you say.
Yeah, as long as Miss Bray never gets to see them, for they concern her rightful inheritance.
Peg cannot know that, can she?
No, but somebody may read them and tell Peg what to do. Oh, she'll get good money for them and be let off besides. I should not have these papers. I should not know of their existence. No one must know I had a bow. I'm undone. Whichever way I turn, I'm undone. I'm betrayed. I shall be given up. I shall die in Newgate.
Ralph Nickleby returns to his office, where he finds a letter waiting for him. He sits down and hesitates before opening it. Finally, he reads the letter and turns a deathly pale.
No. The worst has happened. The very worst. The banking house has failed. So, the rumour must have been abroad in the city last night and reached the ears of Nicholas and those merchants.
And Ralph strides violently up and down the room.
£10,000. £10,000! And only lying there for a day, for one day! Oh, how many anxious years, how many pinching days and sleepless nights before I scraped together that money. £10,000!
Ralph's pacing grows slower, and finally he throws himself into his chair and grips the arms firmly, lost in thought.
The time has been when nothing could have moved me like the loss of this great sum. Nothing. Births, deaths, marriages, and every event which is of interest to most men had no interest for me. But now, I swear, as great as this loss is, my anger is towards him. That boy, Nicholas. The triumph with which he told me the news. Oh, if he had brought it about himself, I could not hate him more. But I shall have revenge. By degrees, however slow, I shall begin to get the better of him. I shall turn the scale. I shall make his life miserable. I shall find a way of making him suffer.
But unknown to Ralph Nickleby, his nephew feels far from triumphant. Indeed, he feels his life is miserable and full of suffering. Madeline, the woman he loves with all his heart, is within his house, and yet she seems further from his reach than ever before. Her very closeness makes this fact almost unbearable to him.
Nicholas, my dear, it seems to me that if the Mr. Cheeryble don't wish Miss Bray to be married, they should make her a chancery ward and shut her up in the Fleet prison. Or if they are so very fond of her, why don't they marry her themselves?
Mother, I don't think you quite understand.
Nicholas, I have been married myself, and I have seen other people married. Not understand, indeed.
I mean that perhaps you don't quite understand all the circumstances in this instance. I have stated them awkwardly, I dare say.
I dare say you have. But I shall take the liberty of saying I do understand, and perfectly well, too. And I still find it odd that such a fuss is being made about Miss Bray marrying somebody older than herself. Your poor papa was older than I was. 4 years old.
But Madeline did not want to marry this man. She did not love him. Don't you see a broad distinction between the two cases?
Well, I dare say I am very stupid. Indeed, my children tell me so almost every day. To be sure, I am a little older than they, and perhaps some foolish people might think I ought reasonably to know best, and that if I say it is a mistake to bring Miss Bray here, then it must be so. But never mind. No, no, my opinion is obviously of no consequence whatsoever.
However, once Madeline is installed in the Nickleby cottage, and the Cheeryble brothers heap commendations and gratitude upon Nicholas for the action he had taken, Mrs. Nickleby changes her mind.
Of course, I think it would be fair to say that it was I who recommended this course of procedure to my son, and although reluctant at first, after a great deal of persuasion, he realized that I spoke wisely. Did you not, Nicholas?
Yes, Mother.
Sadly, soon after Madeline arrives at the Nickleby cottage, the recent trials she has undergone and the shock of losing her father prove too much for her, and she falls ill.
Mother, please go in and see how Miss Bray does now.
I can hardly believe we can be any different from 20 minutes ago when you sent me in last.
Please, Mother, I beg of you.
Oh, very well. My dear Madeline, how are you? She doesn't answer.
How is her fever?
Nicholas, don't talk so loudly. She smiles, but she doesn't answer.
Well, what is your verdict? The doctor has said that she was a good deal better.
No, no, I fear he's wrong. She's a good deal worse.
Oh, no.
It's Kate's fault.
How so?
Because she sits in there day after day, hour after hour, talking to Madeline of nothing but you.
Me?
Yes, upon my word. I'm quite surprised at her being so thoughtless. You know how important it is to keep Miss Bray's spirits up. What on earth can induce her to keep on prose, 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 din, 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 everlastingly on the same theme? No wonder the poor girl is so listless and so low-spirited. Must be very dull indeed.
Yes, indeed, Mother, I am sure it must.
If it wasn't for me, I really don't know what would become of Miss Bray's spirits. And so I tell the doctor every day.
Nevertheless, I think Kate is nursing Madeline with great devotion.
Well, she does well enough. And I do all that I can, of course. But really, it would be most useful if the Cheerbills could send us a servant to help out.
Why, what for?
What for? Well, on the one hand, it is always pleasant to have an extra servant or two scattered about the place. On the other hand, it would mean Kate was more frequently out here with me and not in there.
And what would you have her do out here?
Receive visitors, of course.
Such as?
Such as the Cheerables. And Mr. Frank Cheerable. He is a very amiable gentleman, is he not?
Yes, he is a fine fellow.
And handsome, too.
Decidedly handsome.
When Mr. Frank visits, which he so frequently does these days, perhaps you could take a walk in the garden sometimes, or pretend to doze, or take Smike out for an hour or two.
For what reason?
Well, I dare say you'll understand one of these days if you ever fall in love with anybody. In the meantime, perhaps you might cough in the passageway before you open the door. Or hum a tune to let them know you're coming. It's always better. It's very confusing if you interrupt young people when they're sitting on the sofa and all that sort of thing.
What are you talking about, Mother?
Why, isn't it obvious?
No!
Frank Cheerable is in love.
In love? With Madeline?
No! With Kate.
What? Our Kate, my sister, surely. It cannot be.
My dear, you wait and you will see.
Nicholas had been certain that Frank's visits were due to an affection which he felt for Madeline rather than Kate. An imagined affection which caused Nicholas much torment and jealousy. But now, on hearing this, Nicholas is torn between relief and a new anxiety. That night, he resolves to remind his mother of an unpleasant truth.
Mother.
Yes, my dear?
I ask you to remember how poor we are. Think what we owe Frank's uncles, the Cheerables. Remember what they have done and do every day for us. Are we to thank them by encouraging their only relative to marry poor Kate, who has no hope of inheritance? Think of the fortune Frank will inherit.
Exactly.
Well, exactly. It would seem a deliberate scheme on our part.
But she must marry him.
Mother, she cannot marry Frank Cheerable. I know how hard it will be for her, believe me, but it is the right course of action to take. I am sure of that. I shall speak to Kate on the matter myself. And you must do your part also. You must discourage Frank's attentions.
But why?
Mother!
He is so wealthy.
That is my point.
No, that is my point, Nicholas. And pray remember that poverty is not a crime. I bid you good night.
Whosever point it is, no further action can be taken by either parties for the moment, however, because late that night, another member of the Nickleby household falls ill. The doctor informs the Nicklebys that Smike's health has taken a very grave turn, and Nicholas is advised that the only hope of Smike surviving this newest onslaught of illness depends on him being instantly removed from London to seek some fresher air.
Then I shall do that very thing, at once.
As hard as it is for Nicholas to leave his loved ones behind, nothing is more important to him than his old friend's health. And so, within a few hours, Nicholas and Smike have packed and are on their way.
Dear Smike, we are going to visit the lanes and fields and meadows of my childhood. There is no better, cleaner, sweeter air than there. You shall soon recover. Look, there at the corner of the lane still, there's Mother and dear Kate. There. She waves her hand to you, and now she is out of sight. You'll meet her again when you are well.
Smike closes his eyes and prays silently that he will meet Kate again in heaven, for he feels sure he will never see her again in this world. It is the prayer of a broken heart.